John, when I think of the South, I see a quilt, a beautiful, multicolored patchwork image.
That's Bill Ferris, professor of history at the University of North Carolina. Ferris has been making that quilt for years out of history, out of images, and out of the sounds that define the South. This is how he thinks of this complicated place he knows so well.
I find myself falling back on those voices and the people that I've been privileged to meet along the way.
I'm influenced in whatever I say by the fact that I innately love the South.
The famous and the not so famous.
The man says why I sing the blues is because I lived it.
The B.B. Kings, the Eudora Welties.
I was brought up in a good household because we always had books and we always believed in learning.
The prison inmates.
Well, the high sheriff.
The mule traders, auctioneers. They're all part of the common picture.
Ferris is the senior associate director of the Center for the Study of the American South and the former chairman of the National Endowment for the Humanities. We've had many thoughts of the South recently, with the Confederate flag controversy, even the echoes of a South of the 1950s in that Go Set a Watchman, the new Harper Lee novel that's not really new. Those voices and echoes of a past that stays with us. Sounds that ring, Bill Ferris says, like the bells in a clock tower, marking out the passing years.
Well, I grew up on a farm in rural Mississippi. My family were the only white family. The other families were black. And as a young child at the age of five, a lady who worked for our family named Mary Gordon would take me to the church, Rose Hill Church, near our home. And I learned the hymns and became a part of that community in a way that really shaped my life and inspired me to become a folklorist. And when I was five, I went to the first grade, a little schoolhouse where each teacher taught two classes, and my black friends went to a little schoolhouse on the farm where one teacher taught six classes. Mm. And I resented that, and I asked my parents why my friends and I could not study together. And they said, that's just the way it is. And I never learned to accept that. I always felt it was wrong, and my love for those families and for their worlds within that church and worlds that we shared from the time I first remember inspired me to have a life as a folklorist that would honor their memory, their voices, their music, and their history as a part of my own.
Can you evoke for me what it was like to be in that Rose Hill Church in Vicksburg?
It was powerful. The dramatic voice of Reverend Isaac Thomas and the power of the a cappella hymns, the Dr. Watts hymns sung by the congregation, are memories that I can never forget.
Yes, and I saw Jesus, that Lamb of God, who took the cross of Calvary and carried it to the hill. Yes, sir. And he dug a hole 3 foot deep and hit on a solid rock and nailed him to the cross.
They really transformed me. It was all the human voice and the whole fabric of what I do as a folklorist began in that little church and on that farm.
Well, one drum will make up a dying bed. One drum, I say one drop will make your enemies let you alone. One drop will raise up a bowed down head.
It seemed to me that the black church and the voice of Reverend King were all speaking from the heart about a morality and a religion that dealt with injustice and that responded, as we've seen in Charleston. The voices of that church were unbelievably powerful, and they really touched the heart And that church really set the standard for what I expect religion to do, and all too often it fails.
Tell me a little bit about this voice that you recorded in 1968 in Clarksdale, Mississippi.
Now, what I mean about hidden violence is this. If you own a farm that's working, the man you go to work, you work there a little while, he treats you fair. But the older you get on a job, he may cuss you out and dog you a little bit. You're afraid to come out and tell your friends, or you're afraid to speak about it. He take part of your ointment. You're afraid to ask him about it, because you know perhaps you get killed.
There is a latent violence within this society, and it often rises in an unexpected and frightening way to force people to act in certain ways. And there is a long history from slavery through the civil rights movement through Charleston, South Carolina, in which violence comes to the face of experience in a devastating and awful way. And Southerners, especially this speaker, live with that awareness and are always wary of life because of what he calls hidden violence.
And hidden violence is a narrative in so many Southern writers. Here's author Alice Walker speaking with you in 1989.
When you think of Southern writers, you really think of white Southern writers. I mean, that's what most people think of. I don't really have any interest in sort of integrating Southern writers, you know? On the other hand, how can I possibly ever not be considered a Southern writer since I'm a Southerner and since I write?
For Southern black writers, the complicated relationship to the South is especially powerful, and this is why we see so many Southern black writers lived their literary careers as expatriates. Richard Wright fled the South and lived in Chicago, New York, and finally Paris. Alice Walker lives and writes in her home in Berkeley, California, where she wrote The Color Purple. So they still have deep roots in the South and write about it.
Well, the high sheriff told the deputy, want you to go out and bring me Lalo.
Why is it that in the South there might be so much intolerance for people who end up in prisons and penitentiaries? But there's a recognition that within those walls, a culture will out. There will be singing. There will be storytelling. And that's recognized, even if the people who are in there are victims of intolerance.
It's true. The prison world is a kind of incubator for music and for voices and stories. And we can see some of the greatest music albums, B.B. King's Live at Cook County Jail and Johnny Cash's Folsom Prison Blues, were recorded in the prisons because country music and blues is sung about those worlds. And many of the songs are set within prisons.
Well, the house, yeah.
So the prison is a kind of powerful, high-intensity place where songs like the prison work chants are indescribably beautiful and also deeply sad.
Fast forward to 100 years from now, what do you think the divide between South, North, East, West will be in America? How will the South distinguish itself?
Well, if the past is any measure of the future, and I think it is, the South will always be different It's a different region. There will be a lot more Hispanic, Asian. It'll be a much more diverse population. But there will still be a sense of place, a sense of history, and hopefully the old terrible history of racial violence will have been put to rest. We thought it had been laid to rest in the 60s, but it still haunts us today. But I think, I hope in the deepest way that with the events in Charleston, we have turned a corner, and we've seen the president in his incredibly moving address breaking into song.
Amazing grace, how sweet the sound that saved a wretch like me.
Touching us in ways that Reverend King touched us. And those voices will help give us direction for the future. Hopefully in the coming years, there will be a new South in which, as Reverend King dreamed, black and white will hold hands and play together and share in the deepest way, which is the American dream.
Well, you're one of the voices and sounds of the South, Bill Ferris. Thanks so much for talking with us.
It's an honor to be with you, John.
Bill Ferris is professor of history at the University of North Carolina, the senior associate director of the Center for the Study of the American South, and the former chairman of the National Endowment for the Humanities. You can find a collection of Bill's recordings in his books, The Storied South and Give My Poor Heart Ease, and now online at the Southern Folklife Collection, where the Ferris Collection, containing thousands of his recordings, was digitized just this past week.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing. Or
politics.
Country music.
Hockey.
Sex. Of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.